Okay, thank you. So, okay, I'm going to present some work I have been doing over the last 2 or 3 years, and I have presented already a few times some aspects of it, and people in the audience, although I am very far from Paris, heard part of it, so I'm sorry for them. And it has to do with a very simple problem, the problem of how many times people are repeated in genealogical trees. So let me just tell you what the outline of my talk will be. I don't know whether it's sufficiently focused. So first I introduce you what the question we ask. Then I show you that one can calculate the distribution of repetitions in simple models of genealogical trees. Then I'll discuss a little bit about the comparison between two trees and show you that some of the calculations which are done in this context are very reminiscent of calculations that people do when they use the renormalization group. And then I will finish with, in fact, the problem on which I started, which is the genealogy of a chromosome. So there has been some simple models about how the genes are inherited in a chromosome. And then I'll show you about the results of a model where we can try to calculate the genealogical properties of a chromosome. And all I'm going to say is already published in different journals in PRL because there are some non-trivial exponents one can compute. So okay, I don't know how trivial they are, but somehow these genealogical trees, they give rise to some exponents. And the genealogy of a chromosome is published here. And this work was done, okay, the part about the chromosome was done with a biologist in Orsay, in fact, who works on true trees, not on genealogical trees, on trees in forest. So I met him at a conference, and it's why I became interested in this subject. And the rest was done with Suzanne Amon-Rubia and Damien Zanet. Now, okay, so what is a genealogical tree? If you take one individual, okay, it has a father and a mother and grandfather, grandmother, and so on. And so what you expect is that what is true is that if you go up in the generations, then the number of ancestors doubles at each generation. Now, these individuals here cannot remain different forever because their number grows too fast when you go up the number of generations. So let me just give you an order of magnitude. You see, if you take the mass of Earth, okay, it's a rough estimate, but the mass of Earth is about 10 to the 26 the mass of one of us, a human body. So 10 to the, and if you say 10 to the 26 is about 2 to the 90th generation. So if you take 2 to the 90, it's about 10 to the 26, and 90th generation is about 2,000 years. So this means that if you go back 2,000 years, and if all our ancestors were all different, then the mass just of their bodies would be the mass of Earth. So this means that there are lots of repetitions in the genealogical tree. And so the picture I have shown you before, where I was just drawing a tree, is very misleading if you go far in the past, because this tree has lots of loops. And so, okay, I can show you two pictures to represent it. If you go far enough in the past, of course, I am not going to draw you 2,000 generations, but if you go far enough in the past, then what happens is that when you go far enough in the past, you see that the same people appear at different places in a given genealogical tree. So these are the ancestors. If you look at these people who were living, say, 5 or 6 generations ago, this red couple appears here in this genealogical tree, but appears there and appears several times. And the more you go in the past, the more repetitions you have. So I would say, in the case of this example, that the black people here are repeated only once in this tree. The red ones are repeated 3 times because they appear 3 times, and the blue ones 2 times, and so on. So for each person living at a certain generation in the past, I can associate a number, which is how many times this person is repeated. Now,
the typical number of branches back when you truly find a repetition.
Branches back, what do you mean?
So how many generations back you for sure find a repetition?
Okay.
Typically.
Log of the size of the population. Log, you see, certainly when...
But no, I'm very practical. For a human person, how many generations back he has a repetition?
I think, okay, it depends. For example, if cousins get married, you get repetitions very quickly.
Right away.
Yes. Okay, but now if people live in a small town, it depends on the mixing, but it might be just 5 or 6. But for sure, you cannot go for 2,000 years without huge number of repetitions. Now, more or less the same picture is here, is that, okay, it doesn't matter. So here you take an individual, it has 2 parents, 4 parents, and so on. And, sorry? No, okay, here I have drawn a picture where the 2 parents, there is a female and a male. You see, I took the standard picture, but you could imagine that okay, this person had a child with another one. Okay, that's... Anyway, there will be some exponents which are not sensitive to that in a moment.
I guess the typical number of generation would be not just the log of the population size, but log of this effective population size.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, but as was discussed yesterday, the question of the effective population size, it's like, at least for people who work on disordered systems, it's like an effective medium property, as far as I understand. And so there are many definitions of it which might not be exactly equivalent. Now, okay, so the thing we looked at is a very simple thing, is that we made the simplest model that one can imagine. I'll talk a little bit about extensions of this model, and we considered the case where you have a population of fixed size, you have n individual at each generation, and then we just said, okay, the size is fixed, and each individual is descendant of 2 individuals coming from the previous generation, with no distinction between male and female. So from each individual at a generation, we draw 2 arrows going to the next generation, chosen at random. And in fact, what I'm going to say is not changed if we had, for example, half of a population of males and half of females. The results would be exactly the same. But just to tell you exactly what I'm going to show, this is the model we took. And we count the number of generations when we go towards the past. So the previous generation is G+1. And what we have drawn, that's a result of simulation, is that what is the probability when we go G generation in the past, what's the probability that an ancestor, so an individual living at that time, was repeated R times in a given tree? So we look, and some persons are not repeated at all, they do not appear in this tree, some appear once, some twice, and so on. And what we get is this picture. So here it's for a population of 1,000 people. That's R, the number of repetitions, and that's the probability that an individual is repeated R times. And what you see is that when you increase the number of generations, these curves correspond to different number of generations. We go further in the past. Okay, it's more likely to be repeated many times. And what happens is that if you have the eye of a physicist, especially trained in phase transition, what you see is that this curve takes a shape which becomes independent of the number of generations. You get some kind of scaling, and what happens is that when you go further and further in the past, you get always the same curve, which is just translated from this curve as you go towards the past. And for people who like critical exponents, this is a log-log plot for this probability. This probability here behaves with some, that's a power law. It's a straight line on a log-log plot. And there is a power law here. And okay, one of the things we could solve is to calculate this power law.
What is the repetition of repetition?
the repetition. So you take, for example, me, and you look at all my ancestors 20 generations ago. Some of these ancestors are repeated three times. So R is three for... No, no, no. These are my aunts. Okay. Is it clear? Are there other questions? Okay, so I ask, if I look at a certain number of generations in the past, this is just the result of the simulation. So a certain individual might be repeated, for example, 100 times in a given genealogical tree, and this is the probability that it's repeated 100 times. And in a log-log plot, we get a distribution which becomes invariant, which becomes always the same, except the further you go, the more repetitions you have, and the effect is that just this curve is moving to the right. Now, the claim is that this curve here has a power law, and this power law can be computed. And I am going to explain that.
So the claim is that as g goes to infinity, it keeps moving,
but the shape remains the same.
Scale.
Yes.
You're considering the past, but can you reformulate to the problem for the future? Let's say you have statistical branching process in confined space.
Yes.
Can you just reformulate in this terms? You have a branching tree, and how
many ways you get to? I think it's a very similar problem, but I cannot answer right away. You see, I would need to think more.
In statistical physics, we are more comfortable dealing with branching process in the future.
Yes, I cannot. I cannot answer easily this question, but. Not really, no. I'll try to show you. So just to show you this curve, okay, this is a simulation which was done for a size 1,000. If I take the size 10,000, this is the shape. The shape is exactly the same, except it takes longer to have repetitions, of course. The larger the population size is, the more generation you need to go in order to see the first repetitions. So what happens is that you get exactly the same curve, except that if I was trying to superpose this curve for size 10,000 and the curve for size 1,000, they would be shifted. But the shape of the curve is exactly the same. Now, as a physicist, there is a claim. Here it's constant. I'll come to the non-constant case.
If I go to infinity, it would seem that if I go far enough back, I will have one population, one person with repetition 10 to the fourth, and everyone else with repetition.
No, because that person had, say that person was a male, it at least needed a female to...
Female and male aren't included in this model.
But at least you need each person is descendant of two persons. So at least if you go far enough, there is not a single ancestor. And you see, the result of this model is not to tell you that there is a single ancestor, is that more or less there is the whole population, which is the ancestors of everybody. That's what we will get to.
Because I thought the coalescence model, correct me if I'm wrong, gave a single weird ancestor if you go far enough. And so the question is, how does this differ from the coalescence model?
Because this is sexual, yes. You have two ancestors.
Have you studied this model if you're only looking at maternal ancestors? In other words, if you don't care about your father or grandfather on father's side, if you just look at maternal ancestors, then you still will have a certain number of generations back.
You would.
There is a chance that a certain woman had two
daughters. Yes, I said two. Yes, if you were just following only the woman, but. Okay, each individual has two parents, and the father, say, you could go back to the past and always follow the mother. You get to some person. Now you can decide you do a different strategy. You take mother, father, mother, father, mother, father, and you ask, do you get to the same woman? And the answer is no. You go back as far as you want. So this means that at least if you go infinitely far in the past, there were at least two women there. And if you take another pattern to go back in the past, I don't know, father, father, mother, mother, you would get again to a different woman, and so on. So lots of women.
Don't you think that following Lazarus line leads biological cells, because certain characteristics are transmitted only from mother?
Yes.
So would you get different, for instance, the typical time you have to go back to get recombinant ancestor would obviously be different than two.
I think it would be more or less the same.
But there is only one mother of the parents.
Yes, I think so.
When you say chosen from the previous random from the previous generation, maybe you're envisioning a fixed population?
Yes, I keep a fixed population.
Like you have 1,000 people in this generation.
No, 1,000 at each generation. Okay, so I keep 1,000 people at each generation.
500.
Yes, for example, 500 and 500. Or if you don't distinguish between males and females, you have just 1,000, and each person has two parents chosen at random for.
So some of the people fall out, some of the people are not used.
Some of the people are not used, and so on. Yes. For the exponent I am going to show, no, it's exactly the same. Okay, so now, okay, so again, this distribution of repetitions gets a fixed shape, and the claim is that there is a power law here, and the power law, so the shape, the distribution of repetition becomes stationary, and the power law, it behaves like r to the beta. And the beta, my claim is that it's this number. Numerically, it looks not so far from 0.3, but what I say is that it's non-trivial. Okay, it's a number you can calculate, and it turns out to be that. Now, I believe that from the biological point of view, these exponents have absolutely no interest. For physicists, maybe they might be a little more interesting. But anyway. The distribution, I'll come to that, but the distribution in this simple model is a Poisson distribution. And if you were changing that, it might change a little bit the result. You would get always a universal, same shape, but maybe, okay, the shape will depend on what is the distribution of children per couple. Okay, now, I'm not going to give you too many details on that, although the calculations are rather simple. And the reason why I was interested in this problem is that we all, at least physicists here, we all learn the renormalization group at school. But when it comes to give simple examples where you can compute exponents which are non-trivial, usually you have to do a lot of calculation. And somehow this case is an example where you get the exponent. The exponent is not that simple, and you get it rather easily. So I'm going just to explain that to you very quickly. So again, the quantity I am interested in is the probability, if you go G generation in the past, the probability that an ancestor at G generation in the past is repeated R times. And what we saw on the pictures is that for large G, all the curves have the same shape. Now, one equation you can write very easily is if you ask how many times an individual at generation J plus one, G plus one, okay, what is the number of times an individual at generation G plus one, G increases when we go to the past, so it's repeated, then it just how many ways you can reach somebody in the past, then you go to one of his children and you make one step back. So it's just, this equation is of course exact, and in fact when we do our simulations, it's really the way we do it, is that for each individual, we count how many children it has, and we just sum the repetitions of their children, because the way you can think of it is how many paths connect present to a certain individual in the past. This is the number of times an ancestor is repeated. And now if you have the paths going to all the children, then you go one step back in the past and you get the number of repetition of individual I. Now, as I as I mentioned it before, all the curves look the same. This means that you have to make some kind of rescaling. Now, if you do the right rescaling, it turns out that in this case, it is written here, all the curves become the same. They are not the same shape, they become the same. And so the quantity you have to iterate rather than the Ri are just these weights and the way these weights evolve is given by this expression. So you see, this equation is very simple. The problem with it is that these weights, the number of times the children of individual I are repeated, they are correlated. If these numbers were not correlated, life would be simpler. But it turns out that they are correlated. But how do I go from here to there? It's 2 to the g, so the 2 to the g becomes... See, all these calculations are extremely elementary. But what happened? So this is the equation for the weights I just wrote. And now there is something which makes life much simpler, is that when the size of the population is large enough, then these weights become uncorrelated, which means that, okay, which probably is rather true in populations, is that the descendants of somebody and of his brothers are more or less independent. Okay, unless people would live in small towns or so. Okay, there are little correlations between the descendants of brothers and sisters. So if you accept, and in fact you can show it, that for large n, these weights become, so when the size of the population, these weights become uncorrelated, this makes life much simpler. And what happens also is when n becomes large, you can show that the probability that an individual has n descendants, n children, is given by this distribution here. Okay, so when you put all that together, then it turns out that you can get something, an equation, for the generating function of these weights. And of course, you see, if you know the generating function, you know the distribution. So if you look at the distribution function of these weights, and you take this into account, you get that this, it satisfies this equation, which is here, and it, which can be written. Of course, the sum can be done. And what you get is the following. The generating function of the weights satisfies the following equation, which is written here. And that, for physicists, is very nice because that looks very much like a renormalization group equation, because somehow, if you think of, for example, in phase transitions, that lambda is like a temperature or something, you are relating a property of at parameter lambda to a property at parameter lambda over 2, and so you are not so surprised that you get exponents. Now, to be more precise, so f of lambda, okay, doesn't matter really so much the details how to reach this equation, but f of lambda is just the generating functions of these weights, which are the same as the repetition. So if you just want the distribution of repetitions, the generating function satisfies this equation. And if I draw it, fg plus 1 of lambda as a function of fg of lambda, okay, I draw this. And what happens is that there is a trivial fixed point at 1. If I put lambda equals 0 here, f is 1, it should remain 1, lambda plays no role. So there is a trivial fixed point, and there is another fixed point here, and this fixed point is at the origin of the exponent, as I am going to explain it very quickly. Now, this point is a fixed point. This means that if I put lambda equals minus infinity, I get a certain fixed point, which is this value. And if I put lambda equals minus infinity, this means that I am asking what is the probability of the weight exactly zero. So this number is a fraction of the population with no descendant. Okay, if you go very far in the past, there are some individuals whose descendants became extinct, and then this is this fraction. Those who had no children, or those who had children, but their children had no children, or things like that. And this is this fixed point. Now, when you see this equation, as a physicist, this reminds you some old things that you learn at school, and I just mentioned it here, the renormalization group. And so that's just So that you, at least in condensed matter physics, the way you explain the renormalization group is that you say, okay, you have a system of a certain size and characterized by some parameters like temperature, and then you want this system to be similar to a system of smaller size, reduced size, with renormalized parameter T prime. And somehow, if you are able to relate T prime to T by some renormalization transformation, then you get the exponents and you get the fixed point. And the usual thing is that the fixed point here gives the transition temperature, and the non-trivial exponents are related to the slope at this fixed point. And if you see this picture and the picture I have just shown you before, they are very similar. You have a fixed point, and somehow the exponent I mentioned before is just can be extracted by taking the slope here. So you see, you have some example where you have an exponent, and of course it's non-trivial because you have to find the fixed point of this transcendental equation and the slope, so the number is not a simple fraction, and you can get a non-trivial exponent by this very simple way. Okay, so that's for the technical aspects. Now, being a theoretical physicist, and you might ask, what is the universality class? So you could say, okay, let's try to change the number of parents from 2 to p. Okay, in our daily world, it's 2, but you can imagine that you had p. And then the equation is changed, and you can compute the exponent as a function of p. You can make epsilon expansion, all these things, with logs, and resum the singularities in the way that we know to do. But somehow this is interesting. Okay, we played with that just to extend a little bit the model. But what came out is that, in fact, the case where you take a population where each individual has p parents at each generation instead of 2 is completely equivalent to a system where each individual has only 2 parents but the population is growing. So if you have a system where each individual has 2 parents and the population is growing exponentially this way, then all this equation remains valid. It's exactly the same as if you had p parents. So computing things in the case that p is not 2 but slightly different is not completely crazy, because it corresponds to having a population which is increasing with time. Sorry?
Increasing
going forward, yes. Yes, but you see, then of course you have not to go too far in the past that there are still a population large enough left. Otherwise, of course, if there is less than one individual, then you can. Yes?
We do not think solution of the generation function. Could that be used explicitly bosonic?
Yes. You would get a different equation, but you would get the exponent would be modified, but the fact that you get a stationary shape which is invariant would remain the same.
Can one just say that what matters is not how many parents you have, but how many children of every kind, because that would be given by
maybe, yes, maybe.
So the universality class is not really depend on how many parents you have, but how many children on every.
Yes, yes. Okay. When p is less than 2. Okay, the equation. Okay, the equation become. Okay, you can study this equation and look at the fixed point, and p equals 2 does not look something special, you see. Now, there is a limit which is singular, is when p goes to 1. When p goes to 1, of course, you go to the situation where there is a single parent. And the story is very different, because when you go very far in the past, almost all individuals are not repeated, and a single individual appears in the genealogical tree. So p equal 1 is special. But otherwise, okay, the curve changes smoothly with p, the exponent changes smoothly with p, and so on. Okay. Now, in fact, so I showed you that this is a simple example of the renormalization group. And in fact, It turns out that if you think that this is an example of the renormalization group, then the renormalization group is much older than we could think, because it goes back to the what biologists call the Galton-Watson process, which is something of the 2 centuries ago now, and which is a very simple problem that you say, okay, you have a parent, and each parent has a probability given of having 0 descendants, 1 descendant, 2 descendants, and so on, and you ask, what is the probability that after G generations, you have a certain number NG of descendants? And okay, and this probability, because here the things are independent, are somehow easier to obtain, but what you get is that the generating function of this number of descendants after G generation satisfies, again, a kind of, the generating function satisfies an equation, which is here, and where F is just related to the probability Pn of having 1, 2, n descendants. And so you get some kind of renormalization equation. And if you try to analyze it, automatically you get non-trivial exponents in the way that you always do in the renormalization group. So somehow, at least this kind of equation that we all see in the renormalization group, they were already known by biologists sometime. Yes. So, okay. Now it depends on the model you can take, but if the PNs are given, then you choose a certain F and you get the exponent. And okay, and then you can vary them, of course. Now, there is a last aspect I want to discuss on this case before I go to the problem of a given chromosome, which is the comparison between two trees. So, imagine that now I have 2 persons living now, okay. And then you look at their genealogical tree and you are going to find the ancestors of the first individual, the ancestors of the second individual, and each of these ancestors is repeated a certain number of times in the tree of individual alpha and repeated in general a different number of times in the tree of beta. So usually you have the 2 trees, and if you take 2 individuals at random, then the 2 trees are at the beginning very different, but as I said, if you go far enough in the past, then there should be repetitions. It will happen that at some stage the ancestors of this individual and of that one will overlap. So they will have some common overlap, some common ancestors, and you can ask about the overlap between the 2 genealogical trees. So one way to define this overlap is just to make some kind of scalar product. You can say that all the repetitions of ancestors of this one is a certain vector, all the repetitions of the ancestors of that one give you another vector, and you just make the scalar product. So this is what this definition is doing. I look at the angle between these 2 vectors. These are the repetitions in the tree of alpha, individual alpha. This is the repetitions in the tree of beta. I make the scalar product, and I try to see what this quantity looks like. At first sight, you see, inspired by the spin glass theory, I thought that maybe this overlap would have some kind of interesting properties. It turns out that it has some interesting properties, but not the ones that you would expect in spin glasses. Now, what we get is that if we take, okay, so this is the overlap between 2 individuals. This is the result of a simulation, and in fact, the theory is rather easy to do, is that if you take a population of size 100, you get the curve, which is here, when you go back the number of generations. So what happens is that at the beginning, the 2 trees are very different. And then after a few generations, they become absolutely identical. So they have exactly the same ancestors, repeated exactly the same number of times. So the Q goes from 0 to 1. Now, if you increase the size of the population, again, it goes from 0 to 1. And the number of generations it takes to go from 0 to 1 does not depend on the size of the population. The only thing is that If the population is very large, you have to wait a certain time, and then the transition is very fast. In 8 generations, you go from a situation where the two trees are very different to a situation where the two trees are exactly the same. And this critical number of generations grows like log n. And this, okay, I gave a talk in Orsay in front of biologists, and that for them was very surprising, because the idea usually they have is that when you look at genes and you take a coalescent kind of model, then usually you need n generations in order to find a common ancestor. So n, you see, might be so huge that it's a very, very large number of generations. But here, the number of generations is not that big. You see, it's log n over log 2. And if you go back this number of generations, the population, everybody has exactly the same ancestors. So they are completely homogeneous from this point of view. And it turns out that the calculation leads to a rather simple formula for this Q, which is like that. Okay, so now let me... And this is just comparing two trees. Now let me just... the fact, for example, that there is a 2 here, I would say yes. I am not absolutely sure, for example, okay, I think we have done the calculation in this case, and in fact, you see, this paper was written 2 years ago, and I am not absolutely sure whether we analyzed this case also. I believe so. That's my first reaction, but first I would like to read what is written in our paper.
You derive the similar formula for p equal to 1 p when you're only looking at one
vector? Okay, no, if you do the calculation for p equal 1, then presumably here, you see, these two will become 1 and the time of convergence, okay, the time of convergence, there is a log 2 in the denominator, which will become a log 1. And so the GC will become n. You see, p goes to 1 is very critical in somehow. Because you see, probably the 2 here is the p, log 2 is log p.
If p is 1, it's only they either have the same ancestor or they have different ancestors.
Yes. But you know that the time would be n. It would not be log n.
Equal to 1, you can still have that's this
quantum
real p problem. The mother can have two daughters, so.
Yes, but that, you see, that's asexual reproduction, and the time it takes it's n, and not log n. Log n is much shorter.
But not some non-trivial power.
No. No, it's exactly, and it's an easy calculation, in fact. Now, the last thing I want to present is, you see, somehow this is like macroscopic physics, because okay, that's a calculation you can do without knowing that the world you have DNA and genes and everything. You just look at macroscopic, each person has two parents, and in the macroscopic world you can look at this kind of distribution. Now you can go to the microscopic world and try to ask, okay, what if you take a part of DNA or chromosome or something, you can ask, okay, how the genealogy is reflected on the structure of the DNA. And you see, after being for 2 weeks here, I realized how simple this model is compared to the true world. So I'm going to tell you the model, and I imagine that lots of you might criticize it because it's not that realistic. So there is only one effect that we have tried to take into account, which is what is called recombination. That usually, if you have a father and a mother, if you take a given chromosome, okay, the time when the chromosome is transmitted, usually it comes either from the father or from the mother. But sometimes there is something that people call recombination, that a part of the chromosome of the father is recombined with a part of the chromosome of the mother. So you have these two chromosomes, and sometimes you inherit one of them, only one of them, and sometimes you have just a recombination between the two. So this is the kind of model that we looked at. And in fact, this model has been, I'll mention them after, has been also considered by some biologists now, theoretical biologists. Now, if you look at the genealogy, then you have a chromosome or a piece of DNA of some individual, and if you go far enough in the past, then you are going to be able to say, okay, this part comes from this ancestor, this red part is coming from this one, the blue one is coming from that one, and so on. And some individual, also, for example, this one, this black one is a grandparent, somehow its contribution to the chromosome has been lost because sometimes you inherit only from one parent. So more or less what you can try to understand is what are the statistics of how many each ancestor is represented along a DNA sequence. Now, an example, very simple example, is that, for example, you have four grandparents. At the next generation, this chromosome is just, there is a recombination between these two, and this one just inherits the chromosome from that parent, and then at the next generation, there is again a recombination, and then the chromosome of this individual is a combination like that. Now, okay, so you take a model, and now I should give you the precise definition of the model, and I try to explain it on this picture. So you have to say, what are the dynamics in this model? And somehow you want to represent at a given time. If you look at a given time, you take an individual and you think of his past up to time t, then there will be some regions, blue, because this part of the chromosome is coming from ancestor which was blue, Mr. Blue, and then this part was coming from ancestor which is Mr. Green, and so on. And then when you go one step back in the past, which I call the time dt, because you look at many generations, then you might have some coalescence effects or some recombination effect. So the recombination effect is just that, okay, it is drawn here, say that ancestor blue, in fact, has inherited his chromosome from his two parents, and there was a recombination. So if I go a little further in the past, this blue chromosome, in fact, was cut into two parts. One, I leave it blue, and the other one was red. And there is a competition between this recombination effect, which has a tendency of increasing the number of colors, and what is the coalescence, is that sometimes you get two individuals who have inherited the same chromosome from the same parent. So in the precise model, you give some probabilities to each of these events. This has a tendency of increasing the number of colors. This has a tendency of reducing it, and there is some steady state that you can reach. And then, so this is a model also which has been, in fact, introduced by Wuff and Ain. And then, okay, you have a chromosome, and each site may be you have as many possible colors as the number of sites. And so you try to find the steady state of the system, which you can do sometimes numerically, but the difficulty becomes quickly, increases quickly with the size and the number of sites. So for example, the number of configurations, when you have 10 sites, is just already 100,000, so it goes very quickly. And it's not so easy to get the steady state exactly. But there is something rather interesting compared to usual statistical physics, is that usually in statistical physics, you know the Hamiltonian, and it's difficult to compare, to calculate correlation functions. Now, here it's exactly the reverse. You don't know what the steady state is, but the simplest correlation functions are easy. For example, one correlation function you can ask, what is the probability that two sites have the same color? This means that they are, if I go far enough in the past, that they came from the same ancestor. So what is the probability that two given sites for example, have the same color. So with this procedure that sometimes the chromosome, there is a recombination, and sometimes there is coalescence because two individuals have the same ancestor. And this can be computed rather easily because you just can focus on these two sites and see what happens to these two sites. Ever at a given time, they come from the same ancestor or they come from different ancestors, and there are just two possibilities for these two sites, and so you can write a rather simple master equation for it, and you can solve it, and so you can get the pair correlation function rather easily. And if the probability of recombination is characterized by the parameter R, the probability that two sites at a distance J minus I have the same color is given by this formula. So that's very simple. If you want to calculate the probability for three sites, it's a little more complicated because you have five possible states, but you can do it, and you get an expression. So you can get easily the simple correlation functions, probability that two sites have the same colors, three sites have the same colors, two of them with one color, the third one with a different color, and so on. You can calculate all this rather easily. But if you ask, what is the probability that the total number of colors is a certain number Q? That's much more difficult. So somehow it's a kind of inverse problem of statistical mechanics that you can calculate simple correlation functions, but it's very difficult to calculate global quantities. Now, one quantity we were interested in, just due to the bias of spin glasses, was to calculate this quantity Y, which plays an important role in spin glasses, which is just to say, look at this chromosome, go far enough in the past, and then let me call W alpha the fraction of the length of the chromosome, which is due to the ancestor alpha, so which has color alpha, which means that which is due to the ancestor alpha. Okay, so I don't know if I have a better picture of that. So you see, for example, here, okay, I have an individual and there are a certain number of colors and there is a certain fraction of the length which is of color red, a fraction of the length which is blue, and a fraction of the length which is green, and each one has a length W blue, W green, and so on. And I consider this quantity Y, which, as I said, is interesting in the spin glasses. And it turns out that this quantity, again, like in the theory of spin glasses, is not self-averaging. And it has a certain structure, which this probability distribution is given here. So we learn in spin glasses that this probability distribution of Y is non-trivial. And here we find non-trivial probabilities in a paper which is already 14 years old with Henrik Fluberg. We claim that all these distributions of Y have singularities at one half, one third, and one fourth, and so on. When we looked at spin glasses, it was like that. And here also it's like that, this distribution of these singularities. Okay, so this is one thing that we looked at, the distribution of the length which are inherited from each ancestor. Okay.
Can I ask about whether you've got a linkage in there or not? When you have a recombination, are you really taking the beginning of one from the
yes, end? Yes.
So there's either an R with the probability of a recombination.
Yes, yes.
So there's either no recombination or there's exactly one.
We say that DT is an infinitesimal number, and so the probability of no recombination is 1 minus R DT, and there is a probability R DT of a recombination. Okay, we consider that most of the time you inherit one chromosome, and the chance that there is recombination is very small. But you can make it discrete.
That's not true. There's usually at least one recombination for every pair of colors.
Yes, but maybe if your string was not very long. I don't know how realistic it is. Anyway, you see, going from the discrete time to the continuous time is just a matter of taste. And you see, it's not going to change anything to the result.
Well, one interesting case is if you assume every E was on a separate chromosome. I mean, in other words, if you assume everything was independently inherited, then you'd have a similar picture.
It would be much easier. It's much easier to calculate when you don't put them on a string, but when you just say that there is a box or something, and there. From what I heard here, I realize that this simpler calculation is more realistic. Yes, I agree with you. But at that time, you see, I was still too much a physicist. So. Yes. In fact, probably this curve can be computed exactly in that case. Yes. So this means, in fact, there are, you see, I'm sorry that my presentation is really too much the presentation of a physicist, but there are some questions I heard here about how the genealogical, how the trees of different genes are correlated. And it seems to me that this is related to these questions here. You see, how the trees of different genes. Because when people look at a gene, they go back into the past and they don't get the same tree. And it seems to me that really this is the question here. Okay, thank you. Biological
meaning to this log
n times here. Okay. We share all these ancestors, but we don't. Yes, that's exactly the picture, that we have exactly the same ancestors. In fact, for this particular model, if you go, say, 2,000 years ago, and of course, if the population was completely mixing, 80% of the population will be, our ancestors would be 80% of the population of that time, and of all of us. And the 20% left would be people who had no descendants in this simplified model. So we get all the same ancestors, but of course the parts of the genome that we got are different because the way it was broken and so we get different genomes, although we have exactly the same ancestors. And if you want to have the same genome with no mutations, then you have to go N generations.